schooled sheltering displaced Palestinians in the eastern part of Gaza City in its latest attack. Over 30 people were killed and more than 100 were wounded in the massacre. Most of the victims are children and the elderly. Three more Palestinians lost their lives in an attack on another school-turned-shelter in the city. Several other areas across the Gaza Strip also came under attack. More than 110 people were killed in Thursday strikes. The Israeli occupation forces resumed their offensive against Gaza on March the 18th, breaking a two-month ceasefire. More than 1,160 civilians have been killed since then. The death toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 now tops 50,500, with nearly 115,000 injured. In one of the Israeli strikes on a house in Khan Yunis, nine people from the same family lost their lives, among others, and most of the victims were children. Let's take a listen to the grieving relatives of the family talking about this tragedy.
Around 3 o'clock in the morning, they blew up this house. It's like an earthquake, as you can see the destruction. Destruction in every sense of the word. There are many martyrs, a man, his wife, his daughter, his sons, and his wife was also pregnant, and they were happy that God had given them another child.
Without warning, the entire family was martyred. A barrage of bombs, more than one missile fell on the house. It was wiped out. There was no house, no rubble, no trees, nothing left of the remains of the house.
I swear to God, they are relieved. Relieved from displacement, from carrying their belongings around, and from worries. What do they want from life? There is nothing left in life. By God, the one who dies finds rest. Believe in God, the one who dies finds rest.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has strongly condemned Israel's deadly attacks on the world body's facilities in Gaza. The UNRWA chief called the regime's attacks a violation of international law, demanding an independent investigation into them. Philippe Lazzarini made the remarks while slamming Israel's targeting of an UNRWA building in northern Gaza, which killed nine children. He said, since October 2023, more than 300 UN buildings have been damaged or destroyed by Israel, and over 700 people have been killed while seeking UN protection. Lazzarini's remarks came as the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights slammed Israel's March 23rd attack on a number of ambulances, killing 15 medics and humanitarian workers. Addressing the UN Security Council, Volker Turk said the appalling attack raises concerns over the commission of war crimes by Israel. He also condemned Israel's ban on the entry of humanitarian aid to Gaza for a month. Turk said the blockade of Gaza constitutes a form of collective punishment and may also amount to the use of starvation as a method of war. The Israeli regime presses on with its genocide on the Gaza Strip as the regime's forces displace more Palestinians from Rafah and southern Khan Yunis. Our Gaza correspondent Ahmed Al-Najjar visited Khan Yunis, where Israeli forces carried out an airstrike last night on an area the regime itself had designated as a safe zone, killing more civilians.
Here in Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house. Father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
Until this morning, the families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Weeks after the Israeli regime unilaterally broke the ceasefire agreement, the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is getting worse. Israeli attacks have forced civilians to leave their homes, aid is blocked, and suffering is increasing. Jonathan Withall, head of UN's Humanitarian Affairs Office for the occupied Palestinian territory, has painted a grim picture of the humanitarian situation in the besieged Strip and called on UN member states to take political and economic action to enforce international law.
What is happening here defies decency, it defies humanity, it defies the law. It really is a war without limits. People have been bombed in food distribution points where aid workers have also been killed. Humanitarian warehouses have been damaged in strikes. And since the ceasefire collapsed 2 weeks ago, forced displacement orders are back. So in the last 2 days alone, we've had around 100,000 people that have been displaced out of Rafah, many of them fleeing under fire. As humanitarians, I need to emphasize that we cannot accept that Palestinian civilians are dehumanized to the point of being somehow unworthy of survival. And yet today, unfortunately, marks 1 month without any supplies entering into Gaza. Humanitarians here in Gaza are certainly inspiring, creative, but we're not magicians. We can do our jobs when we're enabled to do so. This crisis needs a political action, and I believe that this needs to start with accountability. Aid will not and cannot compensate for the political failures that we've seen in Gaza. What is happening in Gaza is not going to stay in Gaza. We cannot let the rules-based order be replaced by one set of rules for some and another set of rules for others. But in closing, I do want to acknowledge that there is hope that remains. I've heard people in Gaza say that hope dies last in Gaza. So there is hope that member states will finally use their political and economic leverage to enforce international law. There's hope that a ceasefire comes into effect that stops the slaughter and frees the hostages. And I think there's hope that Palestinians will finally be seen as humans and that this cruelty will end.
Hundreds of protesters have clashed with Israeli forces during fresh demonstrations against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu outside the headquarters of his Likud party of Tel Aviv. The protest was attended by various groups, including the relatives of Israeli captives held by Hamas. They demanded the regime to stop violating the Gaza ceasefire and bring back the captives. Some protesters marched from the Hungarian embassy in Tel Aviv, denouncing Netanyahu's visit to the European country that began on Thursday. The Israeli Prime Minister's European trip was made in complete defiance of an arrest warrant issued for him by the International Criminal Court. The scuffles come amid a rise in demonstrations across the occupied territories and increasing discontent with Netanyahu's cabinet after the onslaught on Gaza resumed. Another source of protest is Netanyahu's attempt to remove Shin Bet head Ronan Bar, who has presided over the investigation into a corruption case involving three of Netanyahu's aides. Israeli forces have fatally shot another Palestinian youth near the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem over alleged stone throwing at settler vehicles. Palestinian media quoted the Israeli organization Rescue Without Borders as saying that the regime's forces fired at the Palestinian, inflicting critical injuries to his upper body. The youth was later pronounced dead. The Palestinian Red Crescent said its medical teams were denied access to the scene by Israeli forces who told them to leave the area. Israel has been frequently condemned for using excessive force against Palestinians in the West Bank and carrying out execution-style killings. The regime's forces often deny medical assistance to people injured in the attacks. Violent raids by Israeli forces and settlers have significantly increased across the occupied West Bank since the Gaza genocide began, leaving at least 940 Palestinians dead so far. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian says the Islamic Republic has never sought war with any country but will not hesitate to defend itself at the highest level of readiness and capability. Pezeshkian made the remarks in a phone call with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman while addressing U.S. threats against Iran's nuclear sites. He reaffirmed that non-peaceful use of nuclear energy has no place in Iran's defense doctrine. Pezeshkian expressed Iran's readiness for dialogue to ease some existing tensions based on mutual interests and respect. He also touched on the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Pezeshkian said if Muslim nations become united, they can end the Zionist regime's crimes against the people of Gaza. The Saudi Crown Prince, for his part, said cooperation among regional countries is key to the region's peace and stability. Pezeshkian also spoke with chairman of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashad. He said if Muslim countries were united, arrogant powers could not take any act of aggression against them. Yemeni armed forces have shot down another U.S. drone over the country's airspace. That comes as the U.S. has continued its aggression against Yemen over its military operations aimed at pressuring Israel to end its war on Gaza. Yusuf Mari reports from Sana'a.
Whatever goes up must come down. A fitting theme for Yemen's military operations in support of Palestine. The armed forces of Yemen have downed yet another U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone, an unmanned combat aerial vehicle capable of remotely control.
The Yemeni army's air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second drone being shot down in 72 hours and the 17th one during the operations in support of Gaza.
Yemen began its pro-Gaza operations in November 2023. Experts say the growing number of American drones being shot down by Yemen not only reflects tactical success, but signals a significant leap in the country's military capability.
The U.S. is very upset with what they have suffered in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea as Yemen continues to attack them. Moreover, Yemen will continue to advance militarily. Yemen is not satisfied with only shooting down 17 U.S. drones. In the near future, there will be more surprises that will benefit the people and armed forces of Yemen.
Amid the successful Yemeni operations, U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that the country conducts its attacks with Iran's support, an allegation strongly denied by the Yemenis.
We will continue to support the people of Palestine. Our military success came from the preparation of our armed and air defense forces, and we will continue to counter this American aggression on our nation. We will continue to support Palestine. Iran is an ally of Yemen. However, they have no say whatsoever with regards to our wars and our military, defending our land from this U.S. aggression.
The United States launched intense airstrikes on Yemen last month after the Arab country resumed its maritime military operations in support of Palestinians in war-ravaged Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have shot down more U.S. drones, demonstrating their growing capability to counter advanced aerial threats and sending a clear message of defiance amid ongoing aggression against their country. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
Israeli warplanes have carried out more airstrikes on Syria despite mounting condemnations from regional countries as well as the United Nations. On Thursday, Israeli aircraft carried out at least two strikes on military targets near the capital, Damascus. They reportedly hit military sites in the vicinity of Al-Kisfa and Mughayliba outside Damascus. There were no immediate reports of casualties. The attacks came less than a day after similar Israeli strikes and a ground incursion killed 13 people in Syria. The Syrian Foreign Ministry said Israel struck five separate areas within a 30-minute window, resulting in the near-complete destruction of the Hama airbase. The regime's strikes have drawn strong condemnations from Iran, Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. UN envoy for Syria Geir Pedersen also decried the repeated and intensifying military escalations by Israel, accusing the regime of destabilizing Syria. Take care and bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
Recently, the Atlanta Federal Reserve suggested that the U.S. economy is on the course to contract in the first quarter of this year, triggering fears of a recession. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story and tells us more. A former advisor and longtime supporter of the U.S. president said Donald Trump's focus on tariffs as an economic weapon is misguided, and America's economy is very wobbly. Stephen Moore said on Sunday night, 9th of March, "I think that the president's emphasis on tariffs right now is misguided. I think we have a very wobbly economy. We saw a not very good jobs report on Friday, 7th of March. The consumer confidence numbers are sinking and other indicators are not positive. Stephen Moore said, "The economy needs a pick-me-up and tariffs are not a pick-me-up. What is a Trump tax cut. Congress has to get this passed as soon as possible, by Memorial Day at the latest. That will provide the stimulus that the economy needs." Long an advocate of tax cuts, Stephen Moore is the author of the books including Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. In 2019, Donald Trump picked Stephen Moore for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board. Moore eventually withdrew after a Fox News Channel reported tax and legal issues, including underpayment of alimony, and other outlets reported racist remarks. Stephen Moore said, "Unrelenting attacks on my character had made seeking a federal role untenable for me and my family." But he told Donald Trump he would continue to be a loud economic voice advocating your policies and would always be at your disposal. Ahead of the 2024 presidential race, Stephen Moore was a chapter co-author for Project 2025, the vast policy plan coordinated by the hard right Heritage Foundation that Donald Trump disavowed on the campaign trail, but which is now influencing White House policy after his victory in the race. Trump and key allies claim the U.S. economy is strong and that imposing tariffs on erstwhile allies such as Canada and Mexico, as well as competitors like China, is the right thing to do. Notwithstanding Trump's own warning to Fox News on Sunday, 9th of March, in which he said the U.S. may go into recession. On Sunday, as Trump's tariffs policy continued to heat up trade wars with Canada, Mexico, and China, Stephen Moore told Fox News host Katie Pavlich, "Well, you used the word complicated, and that's exactly what it has been over the recent days. Where one day the tariffs are going to go up, and then there's going to be a delay in the tariffs, and then there's going to be a tariff on another country. And it's been up and down and up and down. And by the way, the stock market went up and down and up and down with these things." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story. The Canadian province of Ontario is imposing a 25% surcharge on electricity exports to the states of New York, Michigan, and Minnesota in protest at Donald Trump's tariffs. The Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, said in a statement on Monday, 10th of March, "President Trump's tariffs are a disaster for the U.S. economy. They're making life more expensive for American families and businesses. Until the threat of tariffs is gone for good, Ontario won't back down. We'll stand strong, use every tool in our toolkit, and do whatever it takes to protect Ontario." Doug Ford said the government had told the province's independent electricity system operator that any generator selling electricity to the United States was now required to add a 25% surcharge valued at $10 per megawatt hour to the cost of power. The statement said at this level, the surcharge will generate about $300,000 to $400,000 Canadian dollars a day. Ontario, the country's most populous province, has deep economic connections with the United States that would be hit hard by Donald Trump's threat of 25% tariffs. Last month, Ontario Premier Doug Ford cancelled the province's $100 million contract with Starlink, the satellite service owned by Elon Musk, who has been a key advisor to Donald Trump. The move left some remote communities without other options for how to start providing internet access to their residents. Ontario is also among several provinces to have pulled U.S. drinks off its shelves in protest against Donald Trump's tariffs, which the U.S. president has threatened against Mexico and other fellow traditional allies of the United States. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered this same story and tells us more. Donald Trump on Sunday, 9th of March, refused to rule out the possibility that the U.S. economy will head into recession this year and that inflation will rise, as his chaotic trade tariffs policy caused uncertainty and market turbulence. The U.S. president predicted that his economic goals would take time and a period of transition to bear fruit. But when asked in an interview on Fox News Channel's Sunday morning futures show, "Are you expecting a recession this year?" Donald Trump demurred. He said, "I hate to predict things like that. There is a period of transition because what we're doing is very big. We're bringing wealth back to America. That's a big thing. And there are always periods of, if it takes a little time, it takes a little time, but I think it should be great for us." When asked whether he thought his tariffs on U.S. imports would fuel inflation, Trump said, "You may get it. In the meantime, guess what? Interest rates are down." He downplayed recent stock market volatility that followed his ducking and weaving over tariff policy on exports from Canada, Mexico, and China, and similar threats to other countries, despite his usual fixation with market performance in relation to the politics of the day and an appetite to claim credit when stocks rise on his watch. He said, "You have to do what's right." Recently, the Atlanta Federal Reserve suggested that the U.S. economy is on course to contract in the first quarter of this year, triggering fears of a recession that could hit the world's largest economy. In 2018, Donald Trump posted on Twitter, now X, that trade wars are good and easy to win, a view that is not widely shared by financial and economic experts. However, on Sunday, he was cautious overall after boasting throughout his election campaign of the swift gains his policies would bring for the U.S. economy and ordinary American financiers. Global stock markets have continued to fall amid fears that a wide-ranging trade war could dent U.S. economic growth and result in a recession, even as the White House has denied that Donald Trump's trade policies are causing lasting chaos.
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on iranradio.ir with me, Mohammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me, brother.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, salam and greeting to you.
Alaykum salam. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
My pleasure to have you both back in the studio, actually, and always pick your brains about movies and your take on the criticism of these movies that we choose, actually, to criticize in such a program, Viewpoints. Well, one of those movies that we decided to work on is called Silence. Produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Well, it's featuring Liam Neeson, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver, to just name a few. IMDb gives this movie 7 4.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 83%, which is a very high grade, actually. And Letterboxd, 4 out of 5. The box office for this movie was $23.8 US million dollars. The whole movie is about Christian missionaries sent out to Japan to propagate, and Rodriguez and group, two Catholic missionaries, travel to Japan in search of their missing mentor, Freira, who is believed to have been promoting Catholicism by going against the law, obviously, in Japan. But before we move on to the questions, as is always the par for the course, for this program, Viewpoints on Iran Radio, we normally take a listen to a short trailer of this movie, Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints. So stay tuned.
Our Lord said to them, "Go ye into the whole world and preach the gospel to every living creature."
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on Iran Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Syed Abdullah, in what ways does Rodriguez's faith change throughout the film? Especially, I'm talking about like that kind of shift from conviction to doubt.
Well, this is how it always begins, that you have faith theoretically, and you believe in everything because it makes sense, especially when you're in comfort zone.
Yes.
And this, I think this goes across all religions.
Right.
But the minute you start to face with obstacles and challenges and suffering and torture, that's where people kind of lose their faith. But this is something I understand for a common person, right, who doesn't have much details, but information about God and faith. But for a priest, in like Regretus, how he kept his faith kept evolving, and he kept questioning his faith in terms of the existence of God, that he's not hearing him and he's not being there and he's not doing anything about the suffering, which is very hard to swallow, at least from where I'm standing, that either you believe in God and this is a test of God, or you don't. You have no right to question him. But we can see that he kept, from the beginning of the movie, he started questioning, because first he didn't understand, he didn't like the state he was in, being locked under the ground, not having food, not being able to go.
Isn't it part of human nature to question everything that comes in
front? It is part of us to question. I mean,
like if you are faced, for example, with a fake religion, what are you going to do? But I mean, that this aspect of the intellect would come to your rescue.
No, that's what I'm saying. For a common person, it's very logical to question these things. And even with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, when he was trying to preach his Islam, took him 11 years in Mecca, and he couldn't get anywhere except for the few who believed in it. But I'm saying, depending on who you speak to. So if you're talking about a common person, sure. But when you talk about someone who has spent all his life in the church, understood everything about God, and later on his faith keeps evolving and changing, that's a problem.
I see.
It means that the beginning was wrong, then the end obviously follows the beginning. As we say in mantiq, the result follows the worst of prerequisites.
Yes.
Right? So if the prerequisites were bad, obviously this is the result.
That's syllogism.
So like I said, so if you're sitting in a church and going hallelujah 24 hours and everything is peachy and lovely, once you get put in Japan, you start to question the existence of God himself. And this is what we can see in the movie.
I see. Thank you very much. Brother Yasser, how does this movie, Silence, address the theme of suffering?
So there was actually an article that I read after watching this movie.
Mm.
It was written by a very interesting organization that is currently in America. It's called the American Catholic Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family and Property.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting. They have obviously some very radical ideas, to say the least, but it's a good understanding of where Catholicism is at the moment. So they wrote a review of this movie. One mm-hmm. of the only Catholic places they wrote a review on this movie. And they didn't actually say that this movie should be looked at in terms of suffering, but it should be looked at in terms of martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
That this movie makes martyrdom something that is less. So in terms of the same question that you asked, if suffering leads to martyrdom in the way of God, what's wrong with that? It should be something glorified.
Right.
It should be something praised.
Mm-hmm.
It should be something that, you know, is looked for.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering for the sake of suffering's sake, yeah, okay, fine. You can understand that that's a different issue altogether.
Yeah.
But suffering, and this is also important here, that it also therefore depends on the worldview of a person. If a person has a worldview of they being a divine entity who afterwards will reward you for the sacrifices and the sufferings that you did, it makes it all the worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
That is why one of the biggest arguments that the atheists bring against any theist
yes.
is the problem of evil.
Exactly.
The reason they bring the problem is because they don't understand what is behind that evil. When you have a block that everything in is this particular moment and there's nothing beyond this particular moment, yes, evil in a vacuum is evil. But evil for something else is not necessarily evil.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so even here, for some, the concept of suffering for suffering's sake, which sometimes in the movie it shows, that why are you suffering? And this particular article showed that. No, they are not suffering for the sake of suffering. They are yeah. suffering for the sake of God and the religion of God. Right? So therefore, it is incumbent that the suffering is seen in that light. It is not seen as suffering for the sake of suffering's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it's suffering in terms of sacrifice for defending what one believes.
Mm.
However, in Islam, we have the concept of taqiyya, which I'm sure yeah. you may ask later on.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, obviously. Because it's a key point. Yeah, like, is it always the case that you have to do it? Is it necessary to do it? You know,
That's very much flexibility that we actually comes with the territory of some religions. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the Movie Creative Program on Iran Radio. Stay with us.
The price for your glory is their suffering.
It's too dangerous.
We asked for this mission.
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on Iran Radio, with me, Mohammad Javad, hosting this program, and Saeed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Silence, produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Sayed, what is the significance of the image of crucifix in the film? We see so many symbolisms, and this concept of symbolism and symbols in Christianity, in fact, is so highlighted. And Brother Yasser, in fact, mentioned it in one of the earlier episodes. Also, like, he made a reference to the idea of symbolism, and well, we are not suffering for the symbols, basically, right? Yeah. And when he was talking about, or in reference to the question that I had regarding apostasy. So what's your take on this?
So first, let it be known that we as Muslims do not believe in this nonsensical crucifixion that the Christians believe in.
Mm-hmm.
That he was on a cross and nailed to the cross and the thorn on his head and all that nonsense. We don't believe in that. He was never crucified. the Quran testifies to that. Mm-hmm. But as far as the movie goes, because right. we're trying to critique the movie itself. Now, obviously, for Christian people, the crucifixion of Christ is a great symbol for them, to the stage they worship that symbol, right? So in the movie also, every time you're faced with calamities and problems and whatever suffering in life, you go to the cross. Oh, so Jesus did it, so I can do it too. I'm going to do it for the sake of Jesus because he went through this thing. Mm-hmm. Despite what Brother Yasser said, that sometimes that as Muslims, we are bred with this thing that your sacrifices are much higher themselves than the actual goal itself, which is to reach martyrdom. So the suffering that you go through is what makes it worthwhile. And we take pride in suffering. Not that we have to look for something to compare ourselves to so we can get a comfort that, oh, my suffering is as much as it's of this person. So it's not in that concept. So Christianity kind of, unless they go through suffering, then they go to Christ and then Christ makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm. I see. Brother Yasser, how does the character of Kochijiro, the Japanese character in it, illustrate the complexities of faith under pressure? We know that lots of times it happens that faith, you also mentioned it, that the greater level of faith that you have or belief, and the greater the goals are, the greater the sufferings, right?
Yeah. So that particular individual, he's a funny fella. I mean, he comes throughout the movie, right? I think he's one of those, obviously, like we mentioned, it's based on a novel. So obviously he's like one of those characters that you have to have in a novel, right? He comes popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
Right, he's at every island, at every mass, at every thingy. But it also shows the fact that human nature is that, okay, I want to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. He tries to be a good person. He really does try, but he keeps on falling into sin. It's something we all can, to a certain extent, we can kind of, you know, relate to. Yes, we want to be good people, but we fall into sin. However, yes, and we know, and also it shows that the door of forgiveness is open. The ability to change is open. The ability to become a better person is open.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a very good example of that. But obviously in the Islamic tradition, forgiveness is that you don't return to that sin, right?
Yes.
You do it, you ask forgiveness, you don't return to it.
Exactly.
He actually started doing worse sins. he started doing worse sins, right? He asked for forgiveness, then he did something else. He asked forgiveness, he did something even worse.
I see.
But that's reality, though. for Christians, this is the reality.
No, I'm just trying to say that in terms of a role model, he is not a good role model.
Well, neither is Jesus Christ in this case, because this is what Christianity do. Like, as a Christian, you do whatever you do, you go to the box, you confess, you walk out free of sins, and actually that motivates you to do even more sins. I can now, I have a way to clear my sins, so let me do whatever sins.
In technicality, maybe, but in terms
which
of the actual teachings of
really
Christ.
Bad.
In terms of teachings of Christ, it might not
the
be
teaching,
the
teaching.
The teachings are very different.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on Iran Radio. And obviously, we continue the critique of this movie, Silence, in this program, which is produced in 2016, directed by Martin Scorsese. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
The limelight.
There has been a staggering increase in the number of Palestinian prisoners who have died in Israeli regime custody throughout the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, including through torture, medical neglect, and other forms of physical injury. To put this increase in perspective, 20% of all recorded cases of Palestinian prisoners dying in Israeli regime custody since 1967 have occurred since October 7, 2023. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "A Palestinian child died in Israeli regime custody recently, the first recorded case of a Palestinian child's death in Israeli regime detention in history, according to the group Defense for Children International Palestine. Walid Khaled Abdullah Ahmad's family was notified of his death by the Palestinian Authority Prisoners Affairs Committee, without details surrounding the circumstances of his death. The committee told the family that Walid had scabies and an intestinal infection. The 17-year-old, who was held in Megiddo prison located in northern Israel, was walking in the prison yard, became dizzy, collapsed, and hit his head on a railing," the DCIP reported. Other child prisoners cried out for help from Israeli prison guards, but none responded. Walid's fellow prisoners carried him to a gate where the guards took him. The Zionist regime is withholding the teenager's body from his family, preventing them from holding a proper burial. This also hinders an independent autopsy that could determine the exact cause of death. Walid was arrested in the middle of the night on September 30, 2024, from his home in the village of Selwan, northeast of Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank. He was first taken to an interrogation center before he was transferred to Megiddo prison. The children's rights group noted that the transfer of prisoners from the occupied West Bank and Gaza into Israel is illegal under international law and constitutes a war crime. Walid was beaten and abused by Israeli soldiers and imprisoned in Israel, where he was fed meager portions of rotten food and subjected to overcrowded unsanitary conditions, while at the same time isolated completely from his family, said Ayat Abu Ikhtiyash, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. Meanwhile, a 34-year-old Palestinian prisoner also died in Israeli regime custody last month. Rafat Adnan Abu Fona, who was from the Gaza Strip, did not have health issues before he was arrested on October 7, 2023, along with his brother Shadi. He was injured during his detention, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, but his Israeli captors did not allow him visitations or give details surrounding his estate. Abu Fana died at the Shamir Medical Center in Tel Aviv, but was held at the Rommel prison during his detention. Several prisoners have died during their interrogation by the Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's domestic spying and torture agency, since October 7, 2023. This includes the death of Iyad Rantisi, a medical doctor from Gaza, who was the director of the women's hospital in Beit Lahia in the northern area of the coastal enclave. He died only 6 days after his arrest. The Israeli regime's prosecutor's office decided there was no basis for pursuing a criminal case against Shin Bet interrogators. In Rantisi's case, as well as at least one other, Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported in December. The UN Commission of Inquiry published a report this month demonstrating how Palestinians are often subjected to sexual violence during their imprisonment. These acts were committed with either explicit orders or an implicit encouragement by the top civilian and military leadership, the report said. Male detainees were raped and sexually assaulted. Adnan Al-Bursh, the head of the orthopedic department at Ashrafa Hospital in Gaza City, who was tortured and killed by his Israeli captors, had also been subjected to sexual violence, according to the report. Israeli human rights group B'Tselem published a report last year detailing how, since October 7, 2023, Israeli regime authorities converted more than a dozen Israeli prison facilities, both military and civilian, into a network of camps dedicated to the abuse of inmates. While extensive reports highlighted abuse at Sedeh Tayman, the B'Tselem report reveals that a similar pattern of abuse was widespread in Israeli regime detention centers across historic Palestine. Testimonies by former detainees uncover a systematic institutional policy focused on the continual abuse and torture of all Palestinian prisoners. In December 2023, the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel warned that Israel's prison service was being transformed from a professional incarceration body to a vindictive and punitive force. By then, a number of prisoners had already died after being subjected to beating, torture, and cruel abuse, including Palestinians who had been detained well before October 7, 2023. Acts of abuse include sleep deprivation, medical neglect, starvation, beatings, stress positions, threats of violence against family members, and unleashing attack dogs, as human rights groups documented. Walid's death raises to 63 the number of Palestinians who have died in Israeli regime detention since October 7, 2023. This includes at least 40 detainees from the Gaza Strip, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club. This figure constitutes only the prisoners identified as having died in Israeli regime custody by the Palestinian Prisoners Club. The group's director, Abdullah Al-Zaghari, said last year that the real number could be dozens higher. This is the bloodiest phase in the history of the prisoner movement since 1967, the group said last month. There has been a staggering increase in the number of Palestinian prisoners who have died in Israeli regime custody throughout Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, including through torture, medical neglect, and other forms of physical injury. To put this increase in perspective, 20% of all recorded cases of Palestinian prisoners dying in Israeli custody since 1967 have occurred since October 7, 2023. Since that year, the deaths of 300 Palestinians in Israeli custody have been recorded. The Zionist regime continues to withhold the bodies of 72 Palestinians who died in its custody, including 61 of those who died since October 7, 2023, among them Walid.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The UN slams Israel's attacks on its facilities in Gaza as a violation of international law, demanding an independent investigation into the regime strikes. Hundreds of Israeli protesters clashed with the regime's forces during fresh demonstrations against Netanyahu outside his Likud party headquarters in Tel Aviv. And also coming up, Iran reiterates that it does not seek war with any country but will not hesitate to defend itself at the highest level of readiness and capability.
Welcome to the program.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has strongly condemned Israel's deadly attacks on the world's body facilities in Gaza. The UNRWA chief called the regime's attacks a violation of international law, demanding an independent investigation into them. Philippe Lazzarini made the remarks while slamming Israel's targeting.